I'm returning back to base principles. If you're watching Western coverage on the war in Iran, you should watch it from Fox News because at least they're honest about how bloodthirsty they are.
The assets we have in space, the satellites that are there for observation, for communication, I mean, these are the capabilities that are identifying the rocket launches, that are communicating to our forces, and give America an extreme edge in this conflict.
And that's the head of NASA, Administrator Jared Isaacman, with me on Fox Business's Mornings with Maria of Friday on the U.S. assets in space being used in Operation Epic Fury, now in its 16th day. Joining
Never
me now
take
is
that
Fox News
name
senior strategic
seriously,
analyst,
man.
retired four-star General Jack Keane. General, thanks so much for being here.
Jesus Christ. Are there any phrenology deniers who still watch my content? I don't know how the f you can. It's insane. It's going to make me believe in God because I'm starting to believe there's a innate moral framework to the world that just warps the faces of those who are evil.
Here. What an incredible operation. What can you tell us about where we are in Operation Epic Fury at this point?
Well, we've been at this almost a couple of weeks now, and certainly we have made incredible progress here. We've stripped away pretty much almost 90% of the Iranian assets' ability to conduct offensive operation, and that's the obvious: ballistic missiles, drones, maritime capability, and also we have just destroyed their manufacturing capability as well. And by that I mean these are the companies, public and private, that would build the future ballistic missiles and build the future drones. The mission is progressing quite significantly. And our commanders on the U.S. as well as the Israeli side are very confident about their ability to end this in a number of weeks. It'll take some time because they still have real capability there, and we're not going to finish until we take that capability away from them. To
It's
include.
pointless to watch these ghouls lie. I disagree because I think we're going to be embroiled in this conflict for quite a while, and I do think it's interesting to watch the rhetoric shift. I mean, keep in mind, the rhetoric initially was Trump has already won. The decapitation strike killed the Ayatollah Khamenei. Now it's like, oh, well, we're diminishing their ability to sustain a fight in the region. Trump is calling in all his allies, all hands on deck. China! Come and help!
What the Israelis are focusing on, Maria, and that is the organizations that really sustain the regime, the IRGC itself, the Law Enforcement Command, the Bajan militia, which represses the people, and they are attacking those militia groups that are in the streets at various checkpoints in various cities as we speak.
Just because we're winning doesn't mean shit for the average American. How can anti-war Republicans watch this shit? There are no anti-war Republicans. To be a Republican is to covet death. They just like misery. The only reason a Republican would ever be anti-death is because they thought it would lead to higher prices at the gas station, which it did, but they still love death that much.
And also the police infrastructure. So this is the mission plate that we have, and completely focused on it. And we have some time to go, but the progress has been quite significant.
And yet the Iranians have been able to hold the Strait of Hormuz hostage, General. I know that the president talked to us about what the U.S. military was able to do on Karg Island, where Iran exports its oil. But the president was very clear that the U.S. did not touch the oil infrastructure there. What can you tell us about what's needed to loosen up the Strait of Hormuz as the president calls on allies to join this fight? And what about the Karg Island impact as well?
Yeah, I understand the focus on the Straits of Hormuz. The media is focused on it, and it's obviously people think this is a surprise. This has been in our playbook going all the way back to the 80s. Actually, we thought they would go after it, on kind of on day two. It took them a while to get around to it. Listen, here's what we're not going to do. We're not going to go toe to toe with the Iranians over the Straits of Hormuz. That's what they want us to do. They would love us to get into a fight with them, put some troops on the
Oh
ground.
my God. This after you begin a fucking bombing run. We're not going to sink to their level.
Around there in Iran, deal with the Straits of Hormuz, bring Navy into it. They welcome that fight. They have a tactical advantage over that fight, to be sure.
Over the United States? Don't let Trump see this segment.
We're not going to do that. Our main effort is to take their offensive capability away. By doing that, the byproduct will be to free up shipping to move through the Straits of Hormuz and be escorted by Navy vessels. That is our main effort, and believe me, we are not stopping that main effort. The Straits of Hormuz eventually will be a problem that will be solved, but not immediately. On Carg Island, I think everybody has been educated now, is a major strategic asset of the Iranians because 90% of their oil flows through that distribution point. And what I believe taking down the military was all about, Maria, is really about messaging the Iranians. We told them in no uncertain terms, by taking down the military capability and not taking down the oil infrastructure, we can take Carg Island at a time of our choosing. And we choose not to take that now. Would we take it in the future? Those options are there for the president.
Remember, they would have bombed the oil infrastructure on Carg Island if they thought they could get away with it. But doing so would likely create a firestorm in the Gulf that would make it harder for everyone. And it would continue to shut down. The goal for America right now is to return to the status quo before the war, making sure that the Strait of Hormuz can be crossed, the Gulf is safe, so on and so on. And that will be set back considerably if they light the Gulf on fire.
Likely towards the end of this, because if we take Carg Island, either we occupy it or blockade it, there's a number of things that we can do. It's kind of checkmate for the regime.
Would also make Japan do a second Pearl Harbor. That's true. Japan is highly dependent. I know they've got big reserves, but highly dependent on an oil trade from here. That is true.
Now we own all of their major asset. It's 50% of their budget, 60% of their revenue, 80-90% of the distribution points for their oil. So it is clearly a strategic asset. But we will do that at a time of our choosing when it makes sense to us.
Wow.
And we've now sent a loud message to them that this is likely going to happen.
That's incredible. General,
wow.
Thank you so much.
Wow. Wow. Okay, what is Newt Gingrich doing? Instead of fighting over a 21-mile-wide bottleneck forever, we cut a new channel through friendly territory. A dozen thermonuclear detonations, and you've got a waterway wider than the Panama Canal, deeper than the Suez, and safe from Iranian attacks. Okay. Thank you, Newt Gingrich. Thank you, thank you, thank you. All right. Yes, sir. High hurdles for Japan to send naval ships to Strait of Hormuz, official says. In response to Trump begging our allies for assistance in the Gulf? I don't think so.
Very quickly, Mr. Secretary, there's a big debate over whether you all were prepared for what's happening in the Strait of Hormuz. If you were prepared, why is the Strait of Hormuz effectively closed right now?
Because it's right near the Iranian shoreline. The world is abundantly supplied with oil and energy. We knew there would be a short-term disruption in energy flows. And to hear Chuck Schumer say that we didn't, it's just so he knows how foolish that is. And to say stuff to try to undermine the United States in the midst of a world-changing conflict just boggles my mind. But this mission was carefully planned out. It's been superbly executed. On the other side, we'll be in a much better place. The greatest driver of terrorism in the world, the greatest threat to global energy supplies will be defanged. Yes, we have disruption to get there. But we're going to be in a much, much better place in the not too distant future.
Mr. Secretary, let's talk about Russia, the Treasury Department.
This guy looks like somebody else. You know, am I crazy for thinking that there's a younger Bourdain in here? Look at the lips and the really long philtrum. Can you see it? Tell me you can see it. Yeah, I see it. Okay, some people see it. It's Epstein. He does also look a little bit like Jeffrey Epstein, but I was going with Bourdain. Epstein and Bourdain look kind of similar too. So what are you going to do? She wearing an Israeli hostage pin? Yes, of course she is.
Major strikes against Iran's largest oil terminal in Carg Island could prove to be a tipping point in the war. As President Trump announces, many countries will be sending warships to keep the Strait of Hormuz open. Our next guest knows all about fighting the war of terror in this region. Former U.S. Navy Lieutenant Commander Tom Sauer joining us. Commander, thank you for joining us. And as we talk about the options of how you open that Strait of Hormuz, whether it's more air power, whether it's an actual U.S. ground force component, or even allies helping escort ships through the strait, what do you see as the best options?
Thanks for having me, Griff. I would say that, obviously, I think the best option is through naval power. Maybe I'm biased because I went to the Naval Academy and I spent the past 20 years of my life studying and working and training for this problem. So have all my closest friends, even my brother as well. And we've got task forces that have been around longer than I've been alive, dedicated solely to keeping the Strait of Hormuz clear. And a lot of those guys, friends of mine I talk to, are getting ready to ramp it up.
We retired the minesweepers.
They're standing by, and they're very resolute in what they're going to do. I do think it's very good and helpful that we get our friends and allies, particularly I think I've read somewhere that the French are actually sending their Charles de Gaulle carrier strike group.
Dude, I am armored.
That's really good news by what I think this really highlights, because
Americans
over here don't want to see American boots on the ground in Iran or anything like that. And that's why having Trump's great golden fleet is going to be a huge part of this. Now, obviously, that's going to take some time. And one of the key aspects of this is reindustrialization of America. This is our shipbuilding. This is like through allocations of tens of billions of dollars through the Office of Strategic Capital, led by Dave Lorch, under Secretary Hegseth and President Trump's leadership. But this is really going to be a naval problem. I've transited the Strait of Hormuz more times than I can count. And it's a pretty, you know, it is a critical choke point for the global oil supply. And that's something that President Trump has really made a focus.
Oh, it's a leather jacket. I couldn't tell at first. Looks new. I got it like 6 months ago, but I haven't worn it enough. Dude, it takes so much work to break in a full leather jacket. It takes so much goddamn work to break them in.
I'm very optimistic about this in the long term.
And Tom, you raised a really important point, and that is you talked about task force that have been dealing with planning for something like this for many years. I think you're referring to Task Force 52, among others, and it seems to me that really undercuts the critics of the Trump administration that have said that there was no plan to deal with something like this. Explain your thoughts on that and what something like Task Force 52 would do.
Now,
that's fucking insane. Trump, out of nowhere, begged on Truth Social for allied nations, including China, to come help us in the Gulf. And this is being framed as we had a plan all along.
Whenever I heard that, you might have seen a post of mine on X last night that was just saying it's absolutely laughable. Now, granted, Task Force 52, which my little brother was the operations officer for just a few years ago, was dedicated solely to clearing the strait. Now, since then, very recently, it's merged with the Destroyer Squadron Task Force, Task Force 55. But you also have Task Group 56.1, which is Navy EOD, my former occupation, so I'm a little biased towards these guys, using EOD divers, unmanned underwater vehicles, that's dedicated as well to clearing the strait. So this is a constant problem. This is something that my buddies and I have been reading about and talking about and planning for quite literally since we were midshipmen at the Naval Academy together.
God, he's so boring. It does give me a lot of hope that in spite of the fact that they brought the situation on themselves, MAGA doesn't seem to be able to make this conflict very interesting. Like, they were more prepared to build a culture war out of like college campus protests and like transgender athlete rights than they were this. Be so for real. When did he ask China? Yesterday on Truth Social, he specifically said, he listed countries that he thinks should pitch in some help in the Strait of Hormuz, in the Gulf of Persia, and China was one of them. He's named China. Yeah, watch the dang streams. Yeah. Look at this. Personally, my favorite allied country expression of naval non-commitment is intensively looking. What's yours? South Korea promises to communicate closely with U.S. over warship request. U.K. intensively looking at how to help reopen strait, says Energy Secretary. EU ministers to discuss naval mission operation for Strait of Hormuz, says official. Hurdle very high for Japan to send warships, says senior politician. Yeah, nobody wants to lose a warship to a mine over here in the strait, I'm afraid. So funny. Thoughts and prayers. Good luck. Yeah, I didn't read, in response to Trump's Truth Social post, yeah, I didn't read all that. Free the Gulf of Persia or something type shit.
Fox News in Washington. We begin with a look at some of today's top stories. Spring may be just 5 days away, but Mother Nature has other plans. Blizzard warnings are in effect. And the Pentagon has released the names of the 6 U.S. Air Force members killed in the military aircraft refueling crash.
Rest in peace. Died for Epstein.
Days ahead. The Israeli Air Force is also continuing a powerful wave of attacks on Tehran and throughout Iran. Iran is engaging in regional terrorism and extortion meant to deter Israel and the United States from pressing on with the campaign, and is receiving an uncompromising response, which is strong as steel.
Where's Netanyahu? Netanyahu's alive.
Iran is still continuing its attacks against Gulf countries, targeting locations there and Israel. Since midnight, at least 8 missile barrages were launched towards central Israel, triggering sirens throughout the night.
I don't get why American pundits don't give any agency to Iran. They seem to think Iran will just sit there and do nothing. The Nazis did the same thing. It's a common failing with fascists going to war. They are more interested in the propaganda of war than they are the actual commitment of war. So as soon as there's an inconvenient sort of dissonance between the propaganda of we have infinite power, we can do what we want, and actual battlefield tactics, that's when they lose. That's why the Nazis were doing pretty good, conquering half of Poland, all of France, quick, easy wins, but then they got bogged down as soon as they entered the Soviet Union, and they didn't really accomplish anything in the UK. They did very, very, very well when they got lucky or when they were able to take advantage of like surprise or superior technology. But when it came to like when it came to the kind of conflict that you would need to like sit down and really, really prepare for, that's where they f***ed it. Their logistics were bad. Their planning was bad. Obviously, Barbarossa was a failed campaign. And again, they didn't do anything with the Blitz. We all know that, right? Like the Nazi regime completely failed when it came to the United Kingdom. It's possible that they might have been able to take the United Kingdom had they really committed to it and not been so worried about the Soviets. But they wanted to just do strategic bombing, which doesn't work. Of course, that was also the very beginning of strategic bombing, so they probably couldn't have known. We had no, like, prior knowledge in what strategic bombing would do. Didn't help the head of Nazi military intelligence was a double agent and sending infos to the Allies the whole time. Nazi grifters, man. Goes back to the very beginning.
Some damage was caused to the area, but no casualties were reported.
As a result of the missile impact, it caused fire on several vehicles and damages to several buildings. Together with the forces of the Home Front Command, the MDA service, and the security forces that 3 people were badly wounded. At the moment, we are working to inspect the inside buildings to see that there are no one trapped inside and, of course, sealing off the scene.
With the war ongoing, international focus remains on the Persian Gulf.
Genuine question, what is strategic bombing? Strategic bombing is basically just indiscriminate bombing of civilian targets. That's kind of a simplification, but like the difference between strategic and non-strategic bombing nowadays would be like non-strategic bombing would be like drone striking or sending missiles to strike like production facilities, barracks, stuff like that. Targeted attacks on military infrastructure or on production. Whereas strategic bombing is like, fuck it, dog. We ball. We're just going to level the city. It was very common back in World War II. Not so much today because it's expensive and ineffective. It mostly just makes the population mad at you. Just doesn't tend to work that well. The only reason it worked with the Japanese is because we found a big bomb. But we had done strategic bombing prior to that with Germany, with Japan. It really just hardens people against you. Yeah, strategic is a euphemism. Indiscriminate might be a better term.
For the U.S. launched airstrikes against Karg Island over the weekend. The island is responsible for up to 95% of Iran's crude oil processing, though Iran appears to want to continue the fight.
The Strait of Hormuz will not be open to shipping.
You mean carpet bombing? Well, carpet bombing is a specific kind of bombing. It doesn't necessarily refer to the broader tactic. Carpet bombing is literally a bomber that has, like, a wide ray of armaments. You just run over the city and just like a carpet, literally, like you lay a carpet of death over it. You can do carpet bombing without doing strategic bombing, but technically, like, you can carpet bomb a battlefield, you can carpet bomb a barracks or like a military base or an airfield, but yes, we did often carpet bomb cities.
Not a single American Navy vessel will be allowed to enter the Persian Gulf. The presence of America in the Persian Gulf has been the main cause of insecurity over the past 50 years.
Yep.
It is not possible to establish security in the region without America's exit from the Persian Gulf.
Tonight, the Israeli cabinet is expected to meet for a consultation about the next steps in this conflict. Shannon?
Was NATO's bombing of Serbia strategic bombing? In a limited sense, yeah. Usually strategic bombing is more widespread than what happened with Serbia. But the range of targets was definitely a little bit more indiscriminate than it would need to be to be considered like tactical or you know, non-strategic bombing, I think. We definitely did hit some unnecessary targets. in Serbia for sure.
Thank you very much. Joining us now, Brent Sadler, retired U.S. Navy captain and senior research fellow with the Heritage Foundation. Good to have you in with us this morning.
Yeah, good morning, Shannon.
Okay, so let's start here. We want to talk about Karg Island because for a lot of folks, a couple of weeks ago, they'd never heard of this. They didn't know what it was. But the president said, we hit them hard on Karg Island. It's where all of this, most of their exports of oil transit through here.
Yep.
We've hit their military installations, we're told, not yet hit their oil infrastructure, leaving that in place.
Yes, I mean, Karg Island is 90% of the throughput point for all of the Iranian petroleum products that they produce. And China has a lot to lose if that's cut off. The military facilities there, I think, were mostly in place to try to defend against these type of attacks. So I think what really is being sent is a message to Tehran that the United States can reach out and touch those facilities if it so chooses, and that there's more to lose, not only in Tehran, but more importantly in Beijing, if Iran continues on the path it's on.
Yeah, so let's talk about that, because we'll go to our next map here that tells us just how important the strait is. We know this.
That kind of indiscriminate bombing is called terror bombing. I want to be clear that, like, a lot of this terminology is getting more difficult in the, like, in the modern day. It's really, really, really difficult to fight a war without killing civilians. It's impossible. And if you are the invading country, you have to make some pretty tough decisions about what you can consider like a fair target. Ukraine, we talked about this a lot in the context of Ukraine. Ukraine has struck civilian infrastructure in Russia, but I think it's fine because the civilian infrastructure is also critical military infrastructure. Like, there's just no way to do a war without civilian casualties. And if you try to, you'll lose because you're basically saying, like, well, I'm not going to hit any targets ever because there's always a chance a civilian gets hurt. You can't really do it. You just have to try to make responsible choices. Like, a good example on the far end of things would be Israel. Israel just fucking kills people. Israel just hits apartment buildings and elementary schools and hospitals for fun. Like, that's on the very far end of, like, they obviously just want death. Israel just covets death. They'll just kill journalists, medics, hospital, everything. They just kill, 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 kill. It doesn't matter. Just they love death. Bathe in the blood. Who cares? And then on the other side, like, I don't know what a more accurate comparison would be, but, like, during the Gulf War, during Operation Desert Storm, and I'm speaking broadly here, very broadly, for the most part, our aggression was directed against the Iraqi military. Like, there were civilian deaths, right? And the Highway of Death and so on, some stuff. But by and large, on the battlefield, we were organized in a very deliberate way to mostly go after the Iraqi military, which for the most part we succeeded. Then you have like Vietnam. Vietnam, we just f-ing killed people. Vietnam, we just straight up killed people. You had GIs going into random villages, throwing grenades into huts. I mean, just a lot of people. A lot of people. Novosh, you killed around 2 million in Iraq. During Operation Desert Storm? You might be mixing a few things up, my friend. Why isn't war illegal? One day. I thought strategic bombing was where you bombed economic centers indiscriminately to reduce industrial output. Yeah, that's always been like the two big arguments for strategic bombing are you lower their economic output by reducing their ability to produce weapons and you demoralize the population. And oftentimes it just doesn't work. The reasons being that in terms of like dealing with insurgencies, oftentimes you don't even need to produce weapons domestically. There are already so many guns out there. I know it sounds kind of dumb, but like the Taliban don't need to build their own guns. There are like a billion old Cold War Soviet, you know, Kalashnikovs that they can just in boxes for $5. Here's a pallet full of them. You know, there's not really any like domestic industry to speak of there with regard to like military production. And secondly, it doesn't really work to demoralize people that much. It mostly just makes them really, really mad, you know? It mostly just makes civilians really angry because you're like killing their families and stuff for no reason, which isn't great. I think that's bad, in my opinion. Strategic bombing doesn't sound very sound strategically. Well, that's because it's a euphemism that was created by the military to justify killing civilians, you know? I feel like we kind of got the wrong idea from our occupations in Germany and Japan in World War II, because those were like the last times that we were able to do regime change and nation building. You know, the problem is you need the big difference. It's not just about how many resources that you commit to the cause. It's also the narrative, because objectively with Germany and Japan, we were dethroning evil regimes that had initiated the violence. Germany started the war in Poland. Japan attacked us in Pearl Harbor. We had like an unambiguous narrative of moral rightness that provided clarity. And I think it cuts through a lot of the messiness of like insurgency, you know? I think that's the reason why there wasn't a ton of insurgency after, say, Japan surrendered. Because a lot of Japanese soldiers were crazy propaganda brained. Like every US soldier is a devil and they'll eat your babies or whatever. But like you were able to get a really clear narrative. You started it, we're finishing it, we're taking down your regime, your emperor gets to live, and like you surrender, and that's that. And afterwards you stay and you build things up. And I think because Japan and Germany were already relatively well-developed, well, they were very well-developed, they were both industrialized countries, versus like Afghanistan and Iraq, which are not super, well, Iraq more so than Afghanistan, but it really varies with Iraq. Complicated country. Afterwards, it's like, you know, there's already so much internal fragmentation within the country. A lot of people already hated Saddam. Do you think maybe the popularity of Hitler and the emperor were what made the difference? Because if a bunch of people didn't like Hitler or the emperor within Germany and Japan respectively, after they surrendered, a bunch of their citizens would be like, well, f*** them. Now it's our turn, bucko. But because there was like national unity in Germany and Japan, we were able to like dethrone, we were able to like decapitate the whole ambition at once. Their ambitions were locked in with their governments. And as soon as their governments were gone, Now like we fill the void. Whereas with Afghanistan or with Iraq, it's like, oh, Saddam's down? Well, good thing our real leader is glorious Allah. Time to form ISIS. I don't know. It's very complicated. Nation building is so difficult. Regime change is so difficult. It's so hard.
But how much transits through there? You talked about Asia. Obviously, I think it's about 80% of Iran's oil heads to Asia. And so they've got an interest in what's going on here on so many different levels.
Well, actually, 80% of everything that exits the Strait of Hormuz, the energy, that's LNG as well as petroleum, heads to Asia. Now, a few of our key treaty allies, like Japan and South Korea, benefit mightily from that trade that comes out of there. But China is the biggest customer. So China has the biggest worries, and they have long supplies or lines at the pump. And as a kid, I remember this in the 70s.
Yeah, Masayu, but that only works because those governments had total legitimacy to their own populations, you know? If the Japanese military cabinet and emperor were super unpopular with Japanese people, if they had surrendered, I think a lot of Japanese people who didn't already like those governments would have been like, "Fuck it, we ball." They surrendered, but we didn't, you know?
Crisis, so it's too. Their turn right now. But yes, Asia is the biggest benefactor of that trade.
Yeah, I do remember that too. We're dating ourselves, but sitting in the car, I remember my parents waiting in line, and it was based on the number on your license plate, which day you can get in line to get gas. And so
the gas rationing.
That's something that others are going to experience now. Now, I want to get to this issue about their enriched uranium and us trying to get our hands on it. There's been a lot of focus on this place called Pickaxe Island. Mm-hmm. Pickaxe Mountain. It's part of the nuclear facilities there. We don't know if that's where the uranium is. There's a lot of suggestion that it is. Mm-hmm. But this is
the vast majority of Japanese soldiers and Navy men were dead by that point, too. Oops.
Tough place to get to. We understand they've been fortifying this bunker as well.
Yeah, so it's about a mile south of Natanz, which is a well-known site for enrichment of uranium. The IAEA, during the previous inspection routine, a regimen that they had under the JCPOA,
what
was
the
never
hell?
Allowed access to this site. So the Iranians treat this with a lot of sensitivity.
I must have hit the unmute button.
It is deeper than the other sites that were attacked last summer in Midnight Hammer. Mm-hmm. So operationally, if the United States military was given the order to go out and reach and touch this place, it's a different nut to crack. Not impossible. Boots on the ground are one of the options to actually get in there. But it may not be necessary if at least you isolate it by closing off the access points.
Okay. And to that point, the Wall Street Journal says this: if U.S. bombers can't reach deep enough, even with massive ordnance penetrators, then the job will have to be done on the ground. This could involve special forces raid or some other operation once Iran's military is weakened further. They say the only option more dangerous is to do nothing, leaving it for the regime to enrich uranium behind a shield again. But you said it may not be necessarily that we have to take it, but at least block access.
Absolutely. And certainly keep it under complete 24-hour, 7 days a week surveillance. That might require some human intelligence around the site, of course. There is certainly a large and probably even growing disaffected Iranian population that might be willing to provide that information. But a sensitive site nonetheless, one that needs to be watched. It is one of the legacy items of the lingering, still existing Iranian nuclear enterprise.
I got to say, a lot of very hesitant, faltering analysis from the superpower that supposedly ended the war within a couple of days. No? Isn't that interesting? I think it's interesting. It's only going to get worse, man. New video, Iranian cluster bomb explodes in Tel Aviv. Damn, critical hit. That's fucked. 450,000 mobilized, or getting prepared to mobilize. Keep in mind the last time that Israel tried to invade Lebanon after October 7th, they did have to retreat shortly after. They did not like the casualties that they were incurring occupying foreign territory. Didn't get covered much in Western media for some reason. But yeah, it's because all they know is the tech, but they're so dumb and don't have experience. Well, yeah, the IDF is trained pretty much exclusively for murdering children.